and welcome to our first Inside College Hockey postseason podcast. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, and we'd like to talk about the recently completed Frozen Four about a week back, where Michigan State won the national championship. Also talk a little bit about the early off-season movement and also some Stanley Cup playoffs and whatever else may come across our topics here tonight. I'd like to welcome Jeff Howe, Mike Eidelbus, and Jess Myers to the podcast for tonight. And guys, we'll start with a look back at St. Louis, where Michigan State's title is obviously the most memorable thing, but in my opinion, these were three great hockey games. The fans got their money's worth when they went to St. Louis. Your thoughts on that, I guess, first with Mike.
I agree that they were three very well played games, and you know, for my money, the game on Thursday night between BC and North Dakota was as entertaining a hockey game as I've seen in some time. Just end to end action in the last 7 minutes, obviously, of the third period it's about as good as it gets with the amount of action and goal scoring and just guys making great plays at both ends. But, you know, I was thinking a little bit about this Frozen Four and last week and just about Michigan State winning. And I think coming in, that all of us pretty much agreed that of the four teams in St. Louis, Michigan State was probably the longest shot to win. And, you know, and yet obviously they come out with the championship. And I think, you know, even though they won, I think you go back and you play this thing maybe 10 times, I think maybe Michigan State comes out as the champion, maybe what, 2 of the 10? You know, they just, other than the first, you know, first 5 minutes of that game against Maine, they played perfect Michigan State hockey, the style of hockey that they needed to play to win. And I don't know if that's something that they can replicate, but, you know, hats off to them for pulling it out.
Well, that's exactly it. They did what they had to do. They accomplished all their goals. You know, you write down a list of goals on the marker board before the game starts. This is what we need to do to be successful. And Michigan State did it. They got big plays at the right time, especially in that third period of the championship game. Obviously, with Jeff Lurie's huge save and Tim Kennedy getting that game-tying goal late. Those were big plays. They did the job, and they kept BC away from doing what they needed to do. Jeff, do you think it was more that Michigan State imposed their will on BC, or BC didn't play as well as they could have, or didn't play to their potential?
I just think Michigan State, we just didn't give them enough credit. I mean, BC looked tired, really tired in the third period in the championship game. But, you know, you have to give Michigan State a lot of credit to that because, I mean, obviously as the game wore down on Thursday, they, you know, really, as the game got down to the end on Thursday, they really wore Maine down. And the one word that, I mean, I think you guys would agree upon that we heard more in any press conference on Thursday and Saturday was that Michigan State was patient and that they just played patient hockey. And that, you know, even though they weren't necessarily in control in the first or the second or even, you know, most halfway through the third period in either game, you know, well, I mean, they established control in the third period against Maine. But, you know, BC and Maine were both just saying, you know, they were patient. They did what they had to do. And then the next thing you know, the final buzzer sounded and Michigan State just beat you. So, I mean, they played tournament hockey. They got great goaltending. They didn't make any stupid mistakes. They played great defense on the interior, and they just wore the two teams down. And back to the championship game, BC looked exhausted in the third period. I mean, I just remember thinking, you know, 15 minutes to go in the game, that Corey Schneider is going to have to absolutely stand on his head because it doesn't look like BC is really going to be able to convert. I mean, as soon as Lurg made that save on the 2-on-1 when, you know, Rooney fed Boyle and, you know, Lurg made that unbelievable glove stop with about 15 to go, it looked like, you know, BC was just like, wow, I mean, well, what are we going to do to get another one past this guy? And Michigan State used that to their momentum. BC had a defensive breakdown off the face-off there. Michigan State went in and capitalized. They tied the game. You know, Michigan State had new legs, it looked like, after that. And BC was just like, you know, they were confident, but it didn't look like they had anything left in the tank to really get anything by Michigan State. It looked like they were really, they were playing optimistically, but you could just kind of tell by the way they were playing, they were really hoping that if they couldn't score in the third period, they just wanted to get to overtime so they could get that, you know, 15 minutes more of rest before the extra period. The most surprising player on BC, or, you know, the one person who really tells the tale of how tired those guys looked, especially in the third period, was Nathan Gerby. For the last 2.5, 3 months, when BC really emerged and Gerby started to emerge himself, he was the fastest player on the ice, the best playmaker on the ice. Every single time he was, you know, taking a shift. And in the third period, if he was trying to track down a loose puck, or if he was trying to race past the defenseman down the ice, you know, to start a breakaway or an odd man rush, he just couldn't get past the defenseman. And that was something I had not seen out of Nathan Gerby since, you know, back in 2006, you know, before the turn of the new year. So they looked exhausted, but, you know, you got to give Michigan State credit, because it's not a coincidence that they really took control in late in third periods and wore both of those teams down.
So while Michigan State wasn't controlling the puck, they were controlling the play and making BC work for what they got. I think that was the whole story of the game. Michigan State did what they needed to do. Their first forechecker went hard and really finished checks and put some pressure on the BC defense. And by the time BC was able to work the puck out of the zone, Michigan State had some guys held back in the neutral zone and really closed things off. Jess, your thoughts on the Spartans and the championship game, and also we'll transition into North Dakota a little bit.
Well, let me just add to what Jeff said. I mean, I agree that BC looked like they were a pretty worn-down team in the third period. But it impressed me the first 40 minutes of that game how well I thought BC played, you know, offensively, moving the puck up and down the ice. And I was really impressed with what BC did defensively. I mean, shutting down lanes and not letting what little offense supposedly Michigan State had get going. You know, you would think playing that way and with, you know, everyone perceived, all of us perceived, a decided talent advantage that Boston College had, you would think playing the way they did for 40 minutes, BC, by all rights, probably should have had a 2 or 3 goal lead. And as Jeff said, you could really see that frustration start to show in the third period where, you know, hey, why aren't we winning this game by more than one goal? And then the next thing I noticed, too, is when Michigan State did tie it up, all of a sudden they started throwing the puck up and down the ice a little bit and started to, you know, get that confidence to say, hey, you know, maybe we can run and gun with this team a little bit. You know, I think the Spartans sensed that fatigue a little bit on the other side of the ice and said, you know, let's throw some long passes, see what happens. And we saw what happened. I mean, I guess that's why you go to the Frozen Four, is to see a finish like that, you know, whether you're a fan of either team or not. I mean, that was some pretty amazing hockey, especially that last 10 minutes.
What about that breakdown, Bus? I thought, you know, State's opportunistic finish there in the final minute was something else, but I think that was BC maybe kind of losing the plot a little bit there.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't gone back and watched the game to see, you know, what happened, but you kind of get caught watching the puck and then watching some things that go on, and you know, I'm talking about in the last minute there, it looked like Mike Brennan for BC got tied up with somebody, and you know, whether Boyle went in deep or was going off on a change and they somehow got caught. But, you know, I think that was just, and maybe that kind of just stems from the fatigue that we saw in Boston College late in the game. But, you know, how some of that, you know, being tired physically led to making some mental mistakes. And you know, we point at the face-off play where Michigan State wins the draw clean and then goes in and scores virtually an uncontested goal, almost a one-on-none. And then there at the end where they obviously had another breakdown, you know, those are uncharacteristic mistakes from what we've seen from Boston College. And you know, Michigan State obviously took advantage in playing the style of hockey that they play. Those are the kind of things that they have to do to win, is take advantage of those of the errors that their opponents make. And you know, for the Spartans, I think, you know, just looking at, you know, everything that happened over the course of those 2 days, you know, against Maine and against against Boston College, you know, it kind of seemed like you know, a perfect storm, more or less, is that, you know, everything went their way. And I'm not talking about just about getting breaks and that type of thing, but, you know, for some reason, BC ran out of gas. It was okay with playing that a little bit more of a slower pace. And, you know, Jeff Lurg was good in goal, and they got timely goals. And just every, you know, even when things didn't look good for them at the beginning of the game against Maine, you know, they bent but didn't break and managed to come back and make it 2-1 at the end of that first period and still salvage something out of what really could have been a worst-case scenario for them. So,
yeah, that's the sign of leadership.
Exactly.
The sign of leadership, and all championship teams have that in common, no matter what the sport is. You got to get some bounces and you got to get some breaks, but they made them happen. You know,
right.
BC ran out of gas because Michigan State finished their checks and made them work for what they got. You know, it's a great job by State, certainly, through all that.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's go back to North Dakota a little bit here. And, Jess, I want to talk about some news that we've gotten, and it's been reported that T.J. Oshie, who was fantastic in the semifinal game against Boston College, will be returning to Grand Forks. Have you heard anything on Jonathan Toews, and what happens if North Dakota loses him?
No word on Toews yet. You know, we talked about this before the Frozen Four. You know, if there's one guy in maybe in all of college hockey that could step into an NHL lineup right now, especially a Chicago Blackhawks lineup, but that's a whole other topic.
I was going to say, you said step into a National Hockey League lineup.
Yeah. Quadruple A, as you know, we like to call it. But
4A. 4A baseball.
That's right. But, you know, no word on Toews yet. I would think, you know, that'll be an ongoing story until I see him with a practice jersey on, with an Indian head on the front, and the jersey would have to be green in this case, I guess. I am pretty convinced that he's probably not going to be coming back. And I don't have any information on that. That's just kind of a gut feeling I get from talking to people in North Dakota, that if they're going to lose somebody early, it's going to be him. Taylor Chorney has already indicated that he's coming back for next year, and Oshie as well announced that decision middle of last week, that he had done some soul searching, and he wants to take another crack at a Frozen Four. So, you know, and Joe and I, you talked about this a little bit today, but let's say hypothetically Toews does leave. I mean, you talk about winning the lottery. How would you like to be a freshman forward coming in and Dave Haxtell tells you, hey, how would you like to center T.J. Oshie and Ryan Duncan? Any interest in that? I mean, I would think I'd be kind of interested in playing on that line if I were a Fighting Sioux forward.
Yeah, very true. That's it's an opportunity. And it's an opportunity that some of the guys on that North Dakota roster could have, you know, guys who are already there can step up into that role. We didn't know much at all about Ryan Duncan at this time last year. But he got the opportunity to play with Oshie and Toews and made the most of it, and is a Hobey Baker Award winner.
That's right. Thoughts about that? I'm wondering. You know, I'm obviously have a different perspective seeing North Dakota a fair amount and watching Duncan all season. But I did hear some grumbling among folks at the Frozen Four saying, you know, third best player on his line and he wins the Hobey. I mean. And as far as pro prospects go, that may be a legitimate argument. But what's the thought from the non-WCHA perspective on Duncan? Anybody have any opinions?
Well, I think he may be. Go ahead, Rook.
I mean, from a really outside perspective, I mean, the guy started playing well, and his team started playing well. And, you know, it's just like the Heisman in football. You don't always get the best player or the best pro prospect winning that award. And, you know, that's just something that
you've got to be comfortable with. I mean, it's not like it's not a disappointment by any means, you know, from way over here by the Atlantic Ocean, that, you know, not the best player in college hockey won the award. The kid deserved it. He played well, and he brought the play of his team up. And during the tournament, their second line played very well too. But from a team that's so front heavy on that top line, when you step your play up and you bring two, you know, very high pro prospects, when you bring their game up as well, I mean, there's no problem with a guy like Ryan Duncan winning that award, in my opinion.
I'd agree. I mean, you can say what you want about his line mates, and granted, it's a big advantage, obviously, skating with a couple guys like Oshie and Taves, but, you know, you don't score 30 goals just by being on a line with a couple guys. I mean, you're going to get more chances if you're on lines with guys like that, but he's got to finish. And, you know, there was a point in time where Oshie was out and Taves was out, and still Duncan was there scoring and really, you know, more or less keeping North Dakota afloat during that time. And then once they got those guys back in the second half of the year, you know, they took off. And I think more than anything that maybe that's kind of what put him over the top against the other three the other two finalists, is just that, you know, how you know, he was really, for a time there, the only guy scoring during the latter stages of the first half of the season. He was really the only thing that North Dakota had going for him offensively. And then once they got Oshie and Taves back, they were ready to make a run and make a push, and you know, obviously ended up in St. Louis. So, you know, I think that his impact when those guys were not healthy and were out of the lineup shouldn't be overlooked.
Well, you're absolutely right on that, Bus, and that's what made the difference in my ballot. I had the privilege and honor of voting for the Hobey Baker Award this year, and what put Ryan Duncan on the top line of my vote was the fact that he had a consistent year and did it when North Dakota needed him the most. And then, you know, when the other pieces came into place, he carried them from a team that kind of looked like they were going to be out of the tournament. They were outside of the Inch Power Rankings for 2 weeks. You know, then they got better down the stretch at the right time of the season. And it's another criteria that weighed heavily for me. What did you do when it mattered? And I love Nathan Davis, don't get me wrong, but Miami's second half kind of knocked him down a little bit.
Exactly.
So those are the criteria that put him number one on my list. I think it was absolutely fantastic and deserved that Eric Ehn was among the Hobey Hat Trick finalists. And I think David Brown's recognition just shows how special of a year it was for Notre Dame, even though they didn't make the Frozen Four. That's a great, great season for the Irish, who it would be easy to overlook what they did this year because they weren't in St. Louis. But winning the CCHA regular season and tournament titles is an unbelievable accomplishment.
One more thing. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say quick, you know, attending the Hobey ceremony and the press conferences afterwards, Eric Ehn, I mean, what an impressive kid. I had not seen him play. I don't get to see Atlantic hockey and hadn't seen Air Force this year, but you talk about everything the Hobey stands for, not just because he's wearing a military uniform, but, you know, well-spoken kid. You know, they asked him, I don't know if anybody noticed, but Eric Ehn has braces currently. They asked him, you know, what went into your decision to attend a service academy? He said, well, one of the big things is they have free dental. I mean, you know. So, hey, I'm looking forward to him coming back for another year of college hockey and fun guy. And, you know, hey, we need more guys like that out there. Don't take it too seriously.
Hey, I just want to say I hope he is an impressive kid, because he is going to be defending our country, and we need some good people in there when we've got a guy like George Bush running this place.
Wait a second. And we need guys with straight teeth, too.
That's true.
Yeah. And
that's true. Just in case, you know, Boston comes under attack from further electronic devices.
Cartoon characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Bearing light brights.
We need guys like that.
We'll need to mobilize.
I'm going to need to call Jack Bauer to defend my my house tonight. I might have a nuke heading my way right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, Luke Skywalker.
Eric Ean will keep Boston safe for more 9:30 a.m. baseball games in the future.
At least for the next 364 calendar days.
What's that about?
It's Patriots Day.
Happy Patriots Day,
everybody. It's kind of like the bean pot. It's a big deal in Boston and nobody else cares.
I know we're going to get more, we got more hockey to talk about. Does everybody get Patriots Day off?
I had to work.
Is it a postal holiday? Did you get mail today?
We got mail today. But
what's the tradition in your family, Jeff? Do you wait till Patriots Day morning to open the presents, or do you open them the night before?
We have a Patriots Eve.
It's just 24. It's really just 24 hours of drinking Sam Adams.
Yeah, pretty much. it's so much bigger of an event than the bean pot. It's not even funny. I mean, the bean pot is celebrated by 15,000 people, and by the end of the day, it's about 1,000 kids from BU who still care. But Patriots Day, talk about it. I mean, you've got all these Bostonians just filing into Boston. Bostonians filing into Boston. That makes sense.
Because they live there.
You've got everybody from Massachusetts, filtering into Boston at 7 in the morning. They've got the Sox going on, usually at 11. Today it was supposed to be 10, but then it ended up being 12 because we have things straight around here. And then we watch the Kenyans run faster than everybody else.
Really, isn't that what America's all about?
Opportunity.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's a great day around here.
Now, Jeff, when you were at the University of Massachusetts, what was Patriots Day like there? Because that's out in the further western reaches of the state of Massachusetts.
I usually just came home to the east.
Kind of a volunteer, self-appointed holiday.
Right. Well, last year, when I was a senior, I came back. Because it was
Patriots Week.
Right, exactly. I only had classes on Tuesday and Thursday. Those are the perks of going to school for 5 years. You get to take that last semester off. I only had, those two classes, or 2 days of classes a week, so I came back, and it was Easter weekend, too, and I ended up having tickets to the Sox game that Monday morning, and... Well, let's just say if this were 365 days ago, I would not be doing this podcast.
this was 8 days ago, you wouldn't be doing this podcast either.
Well, I think that goes the same for all of you.
It probably does.
A little bit of gym.
We'd like to thank the Feisty Bulldog in St. Louis for hosting us during the Frozen Four.
Yes, and Throttle.
And Throttle.
The official... off-ice headquarters.
Yeah, but not those DJs.
Well, let's not get into that. Let's leave.
Why are you yelling at the DJs?
Let's leave those guys out of it.
Let's just say thanks to the Feisty and thanks to Throttle. The excellent staff and a wonderful location. If you're ever in St. Louis again, or if you are listening to the Inch podcast after being exposed to college hockey in St. Louis, we recommend it. We endorse the Feisty Bulldog and Throttle down on the landing.
Wholeheartedly.
And Jess, I want to get back to something that you kind of segued into before we went to Boston for a couple hours. Talking about Eric Ean and next year, with tons of talented college players leaving early this year, we've got a Hobie race that's wide open.
Absolutely.
What kinds of guys? I mean, we've got Ean. David Brown's
honestly,
back.
No,
David Brown's gone. No. Schneider.
Not.
Schneider's
David
back.
Brown's back.
Bert Schneider's back. Yeah. If the likes of Kyle Oposo and Eric Johnson come back, those could be two very strong candidates. Looking out this way, I wouldn't stray too far from Ryan Duncan's line, and if TJ Oshie is healthy for a full season and can put up the numbers we know he's capable of, you could be leaving the Hobie right there in North Dakota, because he certainly showed he's capable of doing some pretty dynamic and eye-popping offensive things this season and on the big stage at the Frozen Four.
Now, four of the 10 finalists were underclassmen, those being Nathan Davis, Ryan Duncan, Eric Ean, and David Jones of Dartmouth. So, that's your list.
And two of those players, let's just congratulate quickly, one of those players, Nathan Davis and Corey Schneider, were named to the Team USA for the World Championships just recently.
That is true. The initial, the beginning roster was announced that included 18 players, and I think 17 of them have ties to college hockey?
16 ties to college hockey. And then they quickly added number 19. They did a conference call earlier today, and they quickly added number 19 to that list, and that's David Backus, formerly of Minnesota State Mankato. So
really? Oh,
that's
nice.
So
17 out of 19
are current or former collegians.
And we
way
should
go.
We should throw Jack Johnson in there, too. He was named to the team.
Yep.
He had a cup of coffee
with
the Kings. Actually, he probably had a latte, but...
he had a smoothie.
That's what he did. With some wheatgrass.
Yes.
It mixed in.
The best part of that conference call was a reporter from the Canadian press asking several pointed questions about why Paul Stastny, who was born in Quebec City, isn't playing for Team Canada.
Was it Pierre LeBrun?
It may have been.
Really?
I didn't catch his name, but they were... You know, there were questions about his citizenship and if Hockey Canada had invited him and how many players had turned him down, which Brian Brick kind of curtly responded, you know, I don't think that's a legitimate question. So,
well, I mean...
Huge Brian Brick fan. Huge.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah. I am also.
Providence College.
From Providence
Did not
College.
Love him when he was the director of officiating and disciplinary stuff for the league office in New York. But
is that what it said on his business card?
Yes.
Okay.
Ask Dale Hunter. He saw it.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
But love his general managership and his very candid, always candid opinions regarding the game.
Yes.
And also think that his performance over the span of about 48 hours leading up to and including the 1999 entry draft, when he swung those deals to get both Sedins and Vancouver, is one of the great hockey transactions or series of transactions in all time history. Unbelievable job.
I would agree.
Nobody thought that could be done. He did it, and those guys are wicked good.
And he's great at the draft, by the way. Because he'll get cornered and he'll start talking. And
looking forward to the NHL draft in Columbus, Ohio this year.
We need to get an intern for the draft.
Recent Frozen Four site. We look forward to returning.
Anaheim is becoming a very college hockey-friendly NHL team, too. I mean, you look at what New Jersey has done in the East with the likes of Zajac and...
The New Jersey Curry. Sioux.
Exactly. And you kind of see, you know, and credit to Dave McNabb, you know, a good friend of Inch for many years who knows the college game and scouts the college game heavily, for recognizing talent. I mean, I watched the Ducks play last night here in Minnesota and, you know, Chris Kunitz and Dustin Penner, and, I mean, they really know college talent and are not afraid to sign a guy, you know, who may be overlooked otherwise by professional hockey teams.
Yeah, Ryan Shannon and Andy McDonald, two additional names on that list.
Glad he discovered Dustin Penner.
I also discovered Andy McDonald, but that was before Inch was around.
Okay, you taking credit for that one? That's fine. You can have it.
Well, I'll say this much. As a student at Syracuse University, I got in the car and drove down to Hamilton to watch him play at Colgate.
Okay. That's
like the reason you go to the rink, you know, that whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
And he was the reason you went to the rink.
You know,
see, also Mike York.
There you go.
He was awesome.
The funny thing about Chris Kunitz is they signed him, and then they had him, and then they sent him to, what, Atlanta? And then I think Atlanta waived him, and Anaheim got him back.
That does sound familiar.
So they had, like, two cracks at him.
Speaking of former Atlantans, Mark Hardigan, formerly of your Huskies, is also on the Anaheim roster. He was not active last night, but getting a cup of coffee in Orange County, so good for him.
Indeed.
Indeed. But going back to the college guys, I don't know if anybody watched, actually. I don't know if it was even on in most places. If you didn't have the dish, I don't think you got it. It was the Devils and Tampa Bay. Zach,
it was on locally here in New York.
On the Sports Channel New York or whatever it's called, Fox Sports.
Right. It was actually on Fox Sports New York 2.
Wow.
But our local guy picked it up.
Very nice. Well, Zach Parise got number 4 tonight, his 4th goal of the playoffs, but the Devils lost 3-2. So
Zach Parise also got a pretty nasty stick in the throat tonight and was helped from the ice. That was not fun to watch for people who know Zach and know what a great guy he is and a great player he is.
Best wishes to Patrick Eves on a speedy recovery.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Oh, he got.
I heard that he got flattened by Armstrong. That's
yeah.
It was a good fight after too.
Now
was this
didn't
the one
involve Colby Armstrong, right?
No, wait, was it
two other guys?
I think it was. It was two other guys, I believe.
That's funny.
But didn't. And I didn't see any of that game, but wasn't like Mike Comrie fighting Colby Armstrong at one point, which to me would seem like the worst fight in the history of hockey. But but I thought those two got tangled up. But yeah, Eves got pancaked from what I read, and again I didn't see it, but he got drilled.
Full credit to Sens coach Brian Murray, right? Brian Murray?
Yes.
For not complaining about that hit, especially in the wake of the Chris Neal hit on Drury back in the regular season. Very similar.
Right.
Clean, probably. Necessary, probably not.
Right.
And
Ottawa won. I mean, that helps.
Well, it certainly helps. But the point being, best wishes to Patrick Eves.
Right.
Thomas Vanek, a guy who was held out of the Rochester Americans lineup for playoff games as recently as 2 years ago because of his defensive so-called liability, led the National Hockey League in plus-minus this year.
Scored a big goal tonight.
Yes, he did score. He scored his first goal of the playoffs tonight, as a matter of fact.
Controversial, but...
Oh, that was a goal.
Goal was a goal.
They scored twice on that play. I was hoping one of them would count.
Actually, Parise's goal tonight went off of Dan Boyle.
Yeah, side pocket, off the rail.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't pretty, but hey, it looks the same in the scorebook.
Playoff hockey, man. Not too many pretty goals to be had.
No, not at all. Although LeCavier had a nice one the other day.
Oh yeah.
Kind of backhand. There are some. That backhand thing in the slot was pretty good.
Taylor Pyatt's one-time snipe last night in overtime for the Canucks.
He's a former Sabre.
Yes, he is.
You know what? And one thing that we should, actually, Gladdy, you and I should mention, just because we love watching this guy play, welcome back to Tim Connolly.
Absolutely, welcome back. Great, great player.
His head cleared up, and he's a Syracuse guy, isn't he?
Yes, he is, Baldwinsville, New York. He is centering a fourth line. Let me restate that. Fourth line. Connolly, Adam Mayer, Aleš Kotelik. That's like a second power play on most NHL teams.
That's a fourth line. Who's Stafford skating with?
Stafford was on that line for game one. He moved in with Drury and Pominville.
Yeah, that's a terrible line, too.
Yeah. And then the other lines being... Drury and Zubras from the Caps. So Zubras, Drury, Stafford, Afinogenov, Vanek, Roy, and Briere, Hecht, Pominville.
Oh, man.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Cup favorites.
And
hello.
We've talked about him a little bit in the past, too, about Stafford, but you know what? He's going to be a great pro, I'm telling you.
He is a great pro.
Well, I know he
There's
is
a
right now.
He's
but
in
he's
that lineup. I mean,
no, I know that, but I'm saying he's going to be even better.
Well, I understand that,
I mean, in
too.
A couple years down the road. Just think of well, I don't even want to get into it, but he's going to be good. He's going to be really good.
Like and
can we get back quickly? I just want to ask you guys, because Gladys, you mentioned the draft coming up in Columbus, and it kind of made me think a little bit about recent Frozen Four sites. We mentioned the Feisty Bulldog, and God bless those people, and had a great time there. But overall, what were the thoughts on St. Louis? What do you guys think of it? How does it rate compared to some other recent host cities?
Wait, when were we in St. Louis?
I guess there's your answer.
Hey, Gladys, remember Boston? No.
Exactly. No, it was Buffalo.
Yeah, and Buffalo.
That's how much you remember it.
I thought suitable.
Suitable. Okay. Utilitarian?
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't. I'm not going to run back there for another Frozen Four. I thought...
But you'll be cool with it if it goes back there. You'll be like, oh, okay, St. Louis, not a bad spot.
If it went back in once out of the next 15 years, I'd be happy with it. If it was like in a six-year rotation like Boston seems to be, not so much.
Really? Why?
Well, actually, honestly, I prefer it to Boston.
Yeah,
because Boston's rink.
Because you can drive someplace.
Yeah, you can drive somewhere if you want, and you
can drive to the airport and not end up in Connecticut.
Or in a tunnel somewhere.
Yeah, with concrete.
A tunnel called a highway.
If you mess up going to the Boston airport, you're going to wind up in the ocean, not in Connecticut.
No, I'm just saying.
It depends which direction you mess up in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to know where the airport is, first of all.
Let me just say this.
No, go ahead, because I think you and I are in the same boat here.
I was going to say this, because you mentioned Columbus, and it brought back this thought. The weather when we were in Columbus was incredible. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, but it was sunny and 70 and, you know, just great spring weather. And the weather in St. Louis, let's face it, was awful. I mean, it was cold. It was, you know, snow one day. It was exacerbated by the fact that I didn't bring a coat, thinking, well, I'm going to Missouri, it'll be nice and warm. But my thought about that was, if the worst thing I can say about a place is the weather is bad, and on the flip side, if the best thing I can say about Columbus is the weather was really nice, that was a pretty good sight for the Frozen Four, in my opinion, in St. Louis. I thought, you know, for all the city's reputation of being a high-crime spot, I never felt unsafe. I mean, the trains seemed to work as a great way to get around. You can tell it's a good sports town. It's not necessarily a hockey town. It's obviously a pretty big baseball town, but...
No, it is not a big baseball town. No, yeah, now...
Look and
hey,
I
wait,
have
whoa,
a different...
Whoa, whoa, let's not get off on the baseball tangent yet.
Okay.
Because I'm...
Suffice it to say, you disagree on that point, but I do want to give a shout-out to the St. Louis Sports Commission. I mean, I don't know if you guys were over at Union Station at all, but there was stuff going on all the time for fans. I was over there Saturday afternoon, and the Michigan State Band is up on a balcony playing, and, you know, fans are all over the place, and they're shopping, and restaurants and bars. I mean, I thought it was very well done from a preparation standpoint. You know, I said this in one of the notebooks. It wasn't like a place like Albany where it was like ghost town with a hockey rink. I mean, they really made a good effort to make it a fun weekend, and I commend them for that.
I want to add on that a little bit and say that, first of all, I came to St. Louis with no expectations. I'd been there once, and I was more or less a same kind of situation, just there for a couple of days and you're in and you're out. But the two things I think that that really stuck with me were, I like the proximity. Everything was close together, whereas, you know, you kind of look back at Columbus and, you know, the rink's out here and the hotel's over here, and, you know, the restaurants and the...
They had it at the campus instead of the downtown.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, and it was kind of a spread out thing. But the other thing that really impressed me, and it kind of goes along with the whole thing at Union Station, was just how the town, I thought, really embraced the event. You know, maybe it's not a hockey town, and it's certainly not a college hockey town, but I thought that, the businesses did a good job of. Of supporting it, even if they really didn't know what was going on. And, you know, we saw a lot of signs of that in and around the city. And, I think they deserve a lot of credit. And, yeah, I think I would agree with you, Gladdy, that, you know, maybe I don't want to see it there every sixth year or something like that. But, you know, once every 10, 12 years, yeah, I thought they did a good job.
I think what they've done is set a high standard for Washington and
yes.
Tampa.
Yes,
they
really
non-traditional have. College hockey markets.
Yes.
If they want to emulate Frozens, they should go to St. Louis. I think that when it goes to, you know, more traditional college hockey markets, it's probably a better event. I think Denver will be better than St. Louis. I expect that it will be. I think the Detroit one, even with the stadium, which... you know, has red flags all over it.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be better than St. Louis. But I'm curious about D.C. and I'm curious about Tampa. And I have high standards for Tampa because long before they were even part of the bid process, I went to two Lightning games down there. And I traveled with my dad and played some golf, saw some hockey. And I said to him, even before I'd gotten into the rink, just being around the rink and out on the plaza that they have at the stadium, I said, we need a Frozen here. This would be an unbelievable Frozen site. And fortunately, they got the bid. Unfortunately, it's still about 18 years away. But I'm expecting big things out of Tampa. Little leery about D.C., but we'll see what we get in 2 years.
Right. I'm expecting big things out of Denver. And I think part of that is just because I live there, but I think that, you know, that also may work against it. My whole experience, too, is that maybe I'm too familiar with the place and it might not live up to my expectations. I have that concern, too, but, you know, it was never a problem in St. Paul. You know,
we need another Buffalo Frozen.
I'll respectfully disagree.
All right.
I would put Buffalo behind St. Louis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Wow.
Seconded.
Do we have
a motion?
All in favor? It's been moved.
No way.
Yeah.
No
I would,
way.
I would definitely put Buffalo behind St. Louis.
No way.
Yeah, I thought St. Louis did a good job. Granted, I'm not exactly a grizzled veteran when it comes to covering these things. But
you've been to Manchester and Boston enough to know what's good and what's bad.
I've been to Manchester and Worcester enough to know what's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I love Boston, and, you know, I've been to I went to the Frozen in 98 as a fan, and also as a toddler, but, you know.
Went on my third grade class field trip.
Yeah. I think what Buzz said about Denver, if I had to cover Frozen in Boston, I'd be highly disappointed just because I think it would take away from the experience. But I think St. Louis did a good job. And back what you said about the weather, and, you know, I'm not a St. Louis apologist. This is the first time I had ever been to the city. But, you know, it was cold that week in Florida. So, I mean, the whole country had terrible weather that week. So, you can't look back at St. Louis and be like, oh, it's a cold city this time of year because, you know, I think the whole country was, you know, freezing over. But I thought it was a good time. You know, I think going for 6 days was awesome. I think that was a much better idea than going for five. I think tomorrow, next year, we should go for seven.
Oh, I'm, I am. Absolutely. Next year I'm leaving on, like, Saturday. I'm going to go out for the week.
Fantastic.
Just because there's so much to do in Denver. And I mean, there's a lot to do in St. Louis, too, but...
Yeah, like go to the Feisty Bulldog every day.
Right. I mean, that's enough. Drink out of an ice cream pail.
Jeff, I gotta agree with you. What you said about Boston in 2002, you know, I live in the Twin Cities. When it was here in St. Paul, I mean, by all rights, it was a great tournament, but it's tough to have it in your own town. I mean, not only from the standpoint that your expectations are a little different and, you know, you're looking at everything from a much different perspective, you know, of a town you live in as opposed to a town you're in for 5-6 days. It also makes it tough the way the four of us cover the Frozen Four with, you know, which involves a lot of late nights. That's tough when you're going home to your own bed and your spouse and your children at 4 a.m. as opposed to tumbling into a hotel room too. So it's a real different experience when it's in your own backyard.
Exactly. But
I don't have a spouse or children that I know of, but I certainly wouldn't be going back to my own place. I would be checking up in a hotel that week.
What are you, Sean Kemp?
Oh, no, I'm Tom Brady.
he knows he has two kids, though. So. Does he have two? Or two on the way?
Two on the way.
What a bold guy.
Well, Sean Kemp has 14 illegitimate children.
No, he doesn't.
That's not an exaggeration.
I thought it was seven.
No, well, a good buddy of mine. We were looking this up about a month and a half ago. We were looking up all this stuff, and because we want to start a game that, you know, a fantasy league for athletes with illegitimate kids. And seriously, we found like three or four different sources that said Sean Kemp had 14 illegitimate kids.
Well, if one of them was Wikipedia, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
So, it was
one was babydaddy.com.
Can I get in that fantasy league and draft Pac-Man Jones?
Oh, no.
Pac-Man Jones is one special character.
Yeah.
He is, but he's also the reason why the Titans are going to draft Ted Ginn, which is...
They're not going to draft Ted Ginn.
Oh, they are. Mel Kiper said it. It must be true.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Why would Pac-Man Jones, a cornerback, not being able to play the season, result in the Titans drafting wide receiver?
Because he is also our kick returner.
And having watched the Titans last season, you know that their only need was at kick returner.
And wide receiver.
I think the Titans could definitely go with wide receiver, but... you know, to make Vince Young happy, but the Falcons have been trying to make Michael Vick happy with a wide receiver for a while now, too, and that hasn't exactly worked out for them.
Vince Young is a much better player than Michael Vick.
That remains to be seen.
A much better team guy.
Oh, yeah, you can make that argument because he's won a national championship, but, you know, Michael Vick took a much worse Virginia Tech team to a national championship in, I think, 99 and lost to a superior Florida State team. Vince Young had a whole lot around him in Texas.
Vince Young had the worst team in the NFL and almost got him in the playoffs last year.
That wasn't Vince. Did you see their offensive statistics were horrendous.
Did you?
They won.
Not
they
the won, fourth quarter. They weren't. Not
the worst
won, they were three straight won, games when they had about 100 total offensive yards.
Because he's a winner.
You're telling a guy that lives in Michigan that the Titans were the worst team in the NFL?
Yeah. Talent-wise, they were.
We'll take it. Yeah, I don't know. Apparently he forgot about the Raiders.
Yeah, and who was the guy?
The Raiders beat the Titans.
Jess, who was the guy that started the last game at quarterback for the Vikings?
Oh, goodness, what was his name? Jackson.
Something Jackson.
Tavares Jackson.
Tavares Jackson, yeah.
He played like Tito Jackson.
He was a poor man's Spurgeon Win.
Cleo Lemon was watching him going, I can't believe this guy's starting.
Alabama State, second round draft pick.
If you want NFL draft news, notes, speculation, come to Inside College Hockey. We have got it here.
Yeah.
I'll be covering the NFL draft in not so very long, 10 days.
Are you going to New York?
I'm going to Foxborough.
It's all the same
thing. Local angle.
Yeah. You're not going to go to New York and wear a Jets jersey and yell at people?
Hang out with Jeff Lagerman?
Yeah, me and Fireman Ed.
With the 8th pick in the draft, the Jets select Roger Vick.
Glad you know what else is going to be happening on that Saturday, right?
What's the date?
Not sure.
28th.
Here, I'll help you out. The UMass Minutemen are going to destroy Syracuse and lacrosse at Garber Field.
Not a big surprise, considering Syracuse is about 3 in a million this year.
Is Cornell really number one in lacrosse? Did I see? Did I read that correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Do they play tackle lacrosse up there?
No, they razzle dazzle. They're anti-Schaefer.
Wow.
They came into the Carrier Dome and went up 7-0 on the Oranges in the first quarter.
So they play fire wagon lacrosse.
That don't happen very often.
No.
Of course, Syracuse came back to tie it in the second half and choked down the stretch.
Hmm.
That's cool.
I haven't been following. I haven't been dialed in with Lax yet.
I'm glad you mentioned Cornell. I wanted to bring this up, and we talked about it a little bit earlier.
Oh, no.
Stanley Cup playoffs.
Oh, yes.
Best trophy in the world for the appearance of it and the tradition of it is the Stanley Cup, obviously. The second best is the Conn Smythe Trophy, presented to the playoff MVP with a little Maple Leaf Gardens on there. 3 college players have won the Conn Smythe Trophy. Do we have a chance to see another one this year? Who might that be?
I think we all know your answer.
What's my answer?
Brian Miller.
No, Brian Smolinski.
Brian. You got to be kidding me.
He's been great. Very, very good the first 3 games.
You mean it's not going to be Phil Kessel?
No.
Oh, he could be on the
he's
World
going to Russia.
Yeah, he's going to the World Championships. I guess it
Millsy's got a shot.
Millsy's got a shot. But on that team, you know, the goalie is not the guy that drives that team. It's not
you
like
know who is? Brian Campbell.
Well, I think, I mean, if you're looking
he's
at the favorites, amazing. If you're looking at the favorites to win the Stanley Cup, you know, you're looking at Buffalo.
In the East.
In the East, and I think that if I was going to pick a college guy, I wouldn't pick Miller. I'd pick Chris Drury, just based upon his past history of that's, you know, those are the kind of situations in which he plays the best are these, you know, these, you know, the clutch situations.
That is true.
Who would be the, I don't even know, who would you consider number 2 in the East?
Right now, it might be the New York Rangers.
Or Ottawa.
Yeah, or Ottawa.
You know,
Heater.
Heatley, maybe. The Rangers, nobody.
Thomas Polk.
I don't think so. and out west,
I'm just seeing if you're listening.
Out west, Anaheim.
Anaheim's got a lot of college guys.
Oh, they've got a lot of college guys, but, well, Jess.
Would any of those guys win?
Jess has seen them. I mean, have the college guys been the best guys?
The college guys aren't the best guys. I mean, that's still... That's
Niedermeyer.
Team. and the Niedermeyers, but Pronger and the Niedermeyers are clearly the guys that stir that team. I mean, Kunitz is a very good complementary player to those guys, but the college guys are not the ones steering that the good ship duck at this point.
They're not stirring the smoothie.
would that be the duck boat?
That would be the duck boat. Wow,
the duck tour.
Right.
Wow. Tommy Polk was in the lineup for the Rangers on Sunday.
You need to remember that he's still there.
Played 8 minutes, was a minus one. Maybe that's why he only played 8 minutes.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's a minute more.
Probably wasn't his fault.
That's a minute more than Yashin played on Saturday night. So.
Exactly.
Hey. Anything else going on that we need to report?
Most recent Conn Smythe winner out of college hockey was
Joe
Neuwendijk in 1999. Cornell. The others being Brian Leetch in 1994, much to the chagrin of Yale goalie coach Mike Richter.
Wisconsin alum.
And Ken Dryden of Cornell and the Montreal Canadiens.
Brett Hull didn't win it in 99 for his work in the crease.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of that, was anybody else having flashbacks to 99 Stanley Cup at in St. Louis last week when there was still like 1.3 seconds left on the clock and all these people started running on the ice?
Oh, I thought exactly. I said it to you.
Yeah.
You're sitting right next to me.
Yeah, that's the first thing that came and popped into my mind. Like, this game's over and it shouldn't be over.
Yeah. Classy move by Jerry Yard to let him run the last.
Yeah, you know what? That
second off the clock.
Yeah, and that. Go ahead.
Attaboy Jerry Yard.
Yeah, that didn't get it. I mean, obviously, in the wake of that game, it didn't get a lot of play. But I mean, that's an unbelievably classy move at that point in time. I mean, he could have made everybody get off the ice and drop a puck and.
Yeah, with a 1.3-second power play for too many men in the ice, or delay of game, I guess.
Delay of game, or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
But I was just amazed. Two years in a row, the championship game ended with Jerry York standing on the ice, staring up at the big screen. You know, this year it was him looking at the clock and allowing them to run that time off. Last year it was, you know, waiting for that final replay to see if the puck had somehow gone in when it had actually hit the post and glanced out with just a second or so on the clock against Wisconsin. So, lasting image of Jerry York, and not a happy one if you're a BC fan, obviously.
Yeah, well, if Corey Schneider comes back, this team might be right back there next year.
Yeah, that's the next thing I wanted to bring up. Who's going to be good next year? Michigan State's going to be good.
Yeah, Michigan State has a chance.
I think three of the teams that were there this year have a chance to be real good. BC, North Dakota, and Michigan State.
I agree with that.
Yep.
Minnesota obviously has a chance to be. I mean, Minnesota loses what, two guys?
Yep.
Finelli and Briggs.
Others to be determined.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Wisconsin, with the way they finished this season, if they can find consistent goaltending, I don't know if it's Shane Connolly or I don't know if they'll go with somebody young, but I would look for Wisconsin to have a better year. More contributions from young guys, and you know, obviously Mike Eaves knows how to do something right there. So that if I was going to pick it, you know, on April, whatever it is, that dark horse in WCHA, I would look out for Wisconsin.
That's one thing, you know, as I guess it was last week, we were putting together the final rankings, and you know, we kind of looked more or less at what the teams that we ranked have coming back. There's a fair number of teams in our top 20 that have a lot of guys coming back next year. You know, you talk about BC, obviously, and North Dakota and Michigan State, Minnesota. UMass, had John Quick come back, would have been right up there with everybody else. And still, they only lose, what is it, Jeff, about four or five guys, even including Quick.
Matt
Quick, obviously, is a huge loss. But
Yeah, they've got their young raw. I mean, their young talent is you know, their freshmen and their sophomores, along with, you know, PJ Fenton and David Leedier, who were juniors, are, you know, their most talented players. But Chris Capraro was an unbelievable playmaker and their leading point scorer. And, you know, Matt Anderson was a great leader. Mark Matheson could play forward, could play center and defense, another great leader.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kevin Jarman, who, you know, I mean, he had been around for 4 years. He had somewhat of a disappointing career overall, but, you know, obviously scored the biggest goal in UMass history. So, I mean, while they're not losing their four most talented players, they're losing four great pieces that they had, you know, who were contributing down the stretch. Plus John Quick, who, you know, meant the world to that team.
Mm-hmm. Miami brings a lot of people back. I know
that. BU needs to watch goals against, I think. They lose Schaefer, Sullivan, Morrow on the blue line, and John Curry in net.
But they could be more. They could be a little bit better offensively.
Better than what?
Better than they were this year.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, if they have Yip for a whole year, if they have Brandon Yip for a whole year, they'll be better.
They were supposed to have Brandon Yip for a whole year this year. I mean, that's you hope that he's not one of those kids who's just one of those great talents who just keeps getting those odd little injuries that keeps him out of games. But, I mean, there's, you know, there are injuries like knee injuries and back injuries and stuff like that that are obvious reoccurring injuries that you can forecast that, you know, down the road, hey, you know what, maybe this kid isn't going to be a great player 5 years from now. But then there are also the players who just always, for whatever reason, suffer from those little nagging injuries, and they're never able to put 3 or 4 months in a row together. And so far, that's unfortunately been the case for Brandon Yip. You just hope that that's not something that's going to plague him throughout his career.
Clarkson could be good.
Yeah, Clarkson could be very good. They didn't lose a lot, did they?
They lost Weller early and seniors, most notably Mike Grenzi, Mike Sullivan, and Brody Rutherglen. Matt Curley also, who was just okay. He was. Well, Max Koilu, energy guy.
Anybody else out there we should keep our eyes on?
We want to look at the flip side. We want to look at the flip side. Who's in trouble? Who is good this year and is going to drop off? Or should we save that for another podcast?
Well, Jess, why don't you just say it?
I wasn't going to say that, but we know. I know where you're going with this one.
No, I have no idea where I'm going with this one.
St. Cloud State, right? St. Cloud State? Is that right?
Oh, no, I think they're going to be very good next year.
You do?
Well, I don't think they're going to drop off that far.
I think they're going to drop off.
They've got a great freshman class coming in. Yeah, they lost Gordon and they lost Gepford. Anyone who is in Rochester would question whether that's a huge loss because, you know.
Horror, Raddins, Chronic.
Yeah. No, I think they're going to be very good. Raddins, by the way. But
yeah.
Whatever.
Raddins.
No, I don't see that.
I liked Raddins. I thought he was a good player. I liked what he did for that team.
No, I would definitely put them in the top four in the WCHA right now. And
if you put, would you put them ahead of Denver?
Yeah, I think I would.
I don't think I would.
I think Denver's got a lot of question marks and just guys that on paper look like great talents and haven't done as much as they've been expected to do. I don't know what Denver's incoming class looks like, but... Yeah, boy, that's a tough one.
6'2", 185, blonde hair.
Yeah.
I can tell you in a second. They've got some kids that coming in that are pretty highly touted. I know that.
The question with Dartmouth is always the same. You know,
right.
They seem to have the horses. Can they get it done? And they'll have the horses again. We'll have David Jones, who probably will be a Hobie finalist again.
Where's Notre Dame next year? How far do they fall, or are they a contender again?
You know, they'll be. I think they'll be okay. They bring back a lot of their scoring. Where they get hurt is on defense because they lost. They lose Wes O'Neill. They lose. They lose Babin, and they lose Tom Sawatsky. They lose a couple forwards, but Condra's back. Deeth and Thang, that was their top line that's back. Garrett Regan's back. Another one of their top scorers is back. I think they brought back their top five guys. And they bring in some pretty good kids next year, too. I mean, he's got a couple kids from the under-18 team that are coming in next year. A couple defensemen. When I saw them play against Michigan State, I thought that they were pretty good kids. I think Miami will be okay. It will be pretty good next year as well.
Lake State's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, they lose a lot. You know, the thing that getting back to Michigan State, and I just happen to have the recruiting lists printed out here, so I can kind of quickly refer to everything.
We just for the record, we frown upon preparation for these podcasts.
Yeah, exactly.
We're getting our game in track for the off season. Research boy here.
One of the
newfangled internet.
Yeah,
it's the interweb.
The interweb. It's got facts and everything. Anyways, getting back to Michigan State, one of the kids that they're bringing in next year is defenseman Jeff Petrie from Des Moines, and he went in the draft, last year's draft, in 06. He was picked in the second round, number 45 overall, and his dad's Dan Petrie, the former pitcher. But he's
of the Tigers.
Of the Tigers, exactly, 84. Right behind Jack Morris. Anyways,
so
he will throw out
the first pitch at Munn?
Well, I don't know about that. But he's supposed to be a pretty good defenseman. And he's an 87 birth date, so you know he's 19 right now, and you know he's 6'3", and he's only going about 195. So he's got some room to grow.
Since we're on the topic of baseball players, kids, was Morgan Say related to Ron Say?
No.
No.
Okay. Just wondered.
But you did know that El Gasolino, Juan Berenguer.
Oh, yeah.
His son played
Juan
for...
Juan Berenguer's kid.
Played for Northern Michigan. Eastview
High School in Apple Valley, Minnesota.
Chris Berenguer.
Yeah.
Played for Northern Michigan. Any other? That's all I know.
Yeah.
And other than that, well, we'll get into the recruiting and
in a subsequent postseason inch podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, at some point in time, we'll get in there.
Probably around draft time, I would imagine.
Yeah, because we'll start talking about, I think, the top two kids from a college standpoint who are, at least the last I've seen as far as who are projected to go early, are both incoming recruits. Kyle Turris, who is going to Wisconsin next year.
Unbelievable player, all reports I've heard.
Yes, he plays for Burnaby.
Yes, he does.
In the BC.
He's dominant last year at the Royal Bank Cup. Dominant.
Did you see that? Or did you just hear?
I got eyewitness reports.
Oh,
I did not
attend. And the other kid is going to New Hampshire next year. James Van Riemsdyk?
Van Riemsdyk, yeah.
So however you say his name.
Star player on the World Junior team.
Yeah, and he's another big kid too, and I saw him play this year, and he is good. He's really good.
I've heard great things about Boston College commit defenseman Nick Petrecki out of the Albany area.
I have too.
That'll bring in a third straight really good solid defenseman that was highly recruited. Motherwell first, Sneap last year, and now the Polish kid or whatever his name was.
Tricky.
The Polish kid. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Imus.
Say that on a podcast?
Yeah, we can call him that.
It's hosted by the Polish kid.
Yeah, yeah.
We could probably get Don Imus on the podcast as a special guest. He's got time now.
I agree with Patricki, but I've heard that he has not progressed as they had originally
thought.
Yeah,
he was another guy who verbally committed when he was 11.
Yeah.
He just committed last year.
They signed him at a squirt tournament.
Danny Almonte.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
we could have driven over and seen him play when we were in St. Louis. He's playing for like the Southern Illinois something.
Yeah, I saw that. That was in the paper. Yeah. It was in the paper the other. No, it was in ESPN the magazine, I think.
Probably good seats still available.
He's throwing in the Frontier League, I believe.
Yeah. Oh well, it's too bad he couldn't have been in the Frozen this year, so we could have heard, you know, 600 writers say, so what's it feel like to be from St. Louis?
What are you talking about? Danny Almonte is not from St. Louis.
I think that.
Oh, you're talking about Almonte?
Who are you talking about?
I thought, never mind. I thought you were talking about another hockey player. Sorry, I'm playing NHL 2007 right now.
Well, if that's the case, then I'm going to go play Guitar Hero, too.
And I'm going to end the Inch podcast.
Thank God.
Relatively little podcast deterioration. Proud of you guys. And we'll have another Inch podcast upcoming shortly. Also, just on a note for all of us involved with college athletics and colleges in general, thoughts and prayers to Virginia Tech faculty, staff, students, and families of the victims there. Makes you stop and think a little bit, and all the best to the folks down in Blacksburg, Virginia. Thanks for listening to an Inside College Hockey podcast, and we'll have one soon, and thank you for reading InsideCollegeHockey.com.